Our next speaker, Gary Galo, is audio engineer at the Crane School of Music, SUNY Potsdam, where he's also taught courses in music history and audio technology. He's a widely published author whose more than 260 articles and reviews on both musical and technical subjects have appeared in over a dozen publications. He's been the sound recording review editor of the ARSC Journal since 1995, was co-chair of the ARSC Technical Committee from 1996 to 2004, and is a frequent presenter at ARSC conferences. Mr. Galo is also a regular contributor to Audio Express magazine, a frequent book reviewer for Notes, Quarterly Journal of the Music Library Association, author of the loudspeaker entry in the Encyclopedia of Recorded Sound in the United States, first edition, and has also written for the newsletter of the Wilhelm Furtwängler Society of America and Toccata, Journal of the Leopold Stokowski Society. Research projects in recent years have included the design of an archival phono preamplifier, the prototype of which was constructed in March of last year and enthusiastically reviewed by those who have heard it. Gary Galo.
Let me just try the CD player to make sure it works. Yes, okay. Are we ready? You got the script?
Okay. I'm ready.
Okay, thank you very much. On November 25th, 1958, Leopold Stokowski conducted the Western Hemisphere premiere of the oratorio Yunus Emre by the Turkish composer Ahmet Adnan Saygun. The performance took place in the General Assembly Hall of the United Nations in New York City and featured the Symphony of the Air, an orchestra consisting of members of Arturo Toscanini's former NBC Symphony. The concert was recorded for shortwave broadcast by the Voice of America, and a copy of the VOA tape was used by the Turkish Information Office to produce a limited edition LP recording of the performance. Crane Chorus from the State University Teachers College in Potsdam, New York, also participated in the concert. This paper covers the background leading up to the UN concert, focusing on how Crane Chorus came to perform the premiere under Stokowski, and how one of the rarest of all classical LPs was purchased last year for the SUNY Potsdam College Archives. Ahmet Adnan Saygun is considered to be Turkey's most important 20th century composer. Saygun received much of his formal musical education in Paris. He was also a conductor and ethnomusicologist and became a respected authority on Turkish folklore. His researches led him to the writings of the 13th century Turkish mystical poet and philosopher Yunus Emre, which ultimately resulted in a one-hour oratorio bearing the poet's name. Author-pianist Catherine Woodard notes that Saygun freely adapted Emre's poetry to propagate the value of secularization in Turkish society. Yunus Emre was premiered in Ankara in 1946 and was given six additional public performances and two radio broadcasts, all with the composer conducting. The work attracted significant interest outside of Turkey. Saygun went on to lead two additional performances in Paris in 1947. Helen M. Hosmer, director of the Crane Department of Music at the State University Teachers College in Potsdam, New York, and the founder and conductor of Crane Chorus, became interested in performing Yunus Emre early in 1955 after correspondence with Moritz Jagendorf, a dentist based in New York City who was also a folklorist by avocation. Jagendorf was vice president of the New York Folklore Society and was serving as an agent or contact person for Saygun in the United States. Jagendorf expressed great enthusiasm for the work and established contact between Hosmer and Vladimir Lekonde of Southern Music Publishing Company, which had exclusive rights to Saygun's music in North America, so that negotiations for a Potsdam performance could begin. Helen Hosmer founded Crane Chorus in 1931, and during her 35-year tenure as its conductor, she maintained an interest in performing new choral works. In 1951, she conducted the world premiere of Norman Della Gioia's A Psalm of David, a work which Crane had commissioned. Hosmer was intent on adding another premiere to Crane's list of accomplishments. In a letter to Vladimir Lekonde, dated February 10, 1955, Hosmer asked if the work had ever been performed in the United States. In a letter from Southern Music Publishing to Ralph Wakefield, Hosmer's administrative assistant, was there written guarantee that the Potsdam performance of the oratorio under Miss Hosmer's direction would be the American premiere? For reasons that remain unclear, there was no further discussion regarding a performance of Eunice Emery in Potsdam until January 1957. This time, Hosmer secured the rights to the American premiere, with the Potsdam performance scheduled to take place in the fall of 1958. Unbeknownst to Helen Hosmer, Leopold Stokowski had also taken an interest in Seguin's oratorio. According to Stokowski biographer Oliver Daniel, Stokowski had studied Seguin's score for over a year and had numerous conversations with Turkish officials in their New York consulate, as well as with Turkish delegates to the United Nations. According to Woodard, Stokowski and Seguin had attempted, unsuccessfully, to arrange a performance in Carnegie Hall in 1955. Seguin remained in touch with Stokowski, finally seizing an opportunity to perform Eunice Emery at the United Nations in 1958. The Turkish government planned to sponsor the concert in conjunction with a reception for United Nations delegates given by UN President Charles Malik and his wife and Secretary General Dag Hammarskjöld. Woodard notes that there were clear political motivations behind sponsorship of the concert, specifically to increase awareness and understanding of Turkish culture, with Eunice Emery providing a specific model of modern Turkish classical music. Since the work reflected Seguin's European education, it also reflected Turkey's policies toward modernization and secularization. Although the poetry selected by Seguin contains many references to God, they are all quite generic. There is no mention of any specific religion or religious group. Helen Hosmer was probably contacted by telephone when Turkish officials discovered that she had secured the rights to the American premiere. In a memorandum to herself dated September 30, 1958, Hosmer writes that Lacombe of Southern Music Publishing had made the contract with her for the premiere and that she must give permission for any performance that would take place in New York. Hosmer wrote to Lacombe on October 5, 1958, noting that the school was disappointed that the premiere would not take place in Potsdam, but also expressing her willingness to make adjustments in exchange for the honor of participating in the UN performance. Always looking after the best interests of her school, Hosmer noted that Crane would be happy to release the rights for the premiere to the UN, provided that appropriate credit would be given in the program, including a mention of the upcoming performance in Potsdam. This slide shows the first paragraph of the program notes with the credit as requested by Hosmer. The UN performance was now being billed as the Western Hemisphere premiere rather than the American or North American premiere. As stated earlier, two performances had been given in Paris in 1947, but Paris is actually in the Eastern Hemisphere, so this claim was entirely appropriate. Hosmer received a formal invitation to participate in the concert from the Turkish ambassador to the United Nations, Seyfullah Esen. In performance, Crane Chorus normally numbered about 250, but 110 members were selected to participate in the United Nations concert. This was partly due to the expense of bringing the entire chorus to New York, and it's doubtful that the General Assembly Hall would have accommodated the entire chorus anyway. Hosmer asked Brock McElharen, her assistant conductor, to prepare Crane Chorus for both the United Nations and the Potsdam performances of Eunice Emery. During his 41-year tenure at Crane, he prepared and conducted many difficult 20th century choral works and was well-suited to the task of preparing Seguin's oratorio. Hosmer was very interested in having a commercial recording made of the UN performance, and in a letter dated October 18th, she asked Seguin if anything was being done to facilitate this. On November 20th, she received a letter from Maddie Schneebaum, Special Events Officer for the United States Information Agency, confirming a phone conversation in which Hosmer had granted permission for the UN concert to be recorded for overseas broadcast by the Voice of America, and requesting written confirmation from her. There seems to have been no further correspondence regarding a commercial recording, but the Turkish Information Office in New York used the VOA recording as the source for a very limited edition LP of Eunice Emery. The extent of distribution is unknown, but the record remains one of the rarest of all classical LPs and certainly the most elusive of all of Stokowski's recordings. One evening in early February 2009, Ed Kamara, music librarian at the Crane School of Music, whom some of you know, was searching eBay for Stokowski recordings and found a listing for the Turkish Information Office LP of Yunus Emre. The record was listed by a Turkish dealer calling itself Vinyl Breeze for a minimum bid of $999. Ed emailed the link to me, and I immediately contacted the dean of the Crane School, the college president, and the college archivist. We agreed that the price was rather steep, but I decided to follow the auction to the end. The record didn't sell, so after securing enough donations to cover the cost, I contacted the dealer, explained our involvement in that performance, and offered him $500. The dealer graciously accepted, and the record now resides safely in our college archives. The eBay ad claimed that this was the only known copy of this record, but this is not exactly correct. A search of the WorldCat database shows only one copy in addition to SUNY Potsdam's, held at the New York Public Library, and among the many collectors I've known over the years, not one has actually seen a privately owned copy of the record. The New York Public Library catalog notes that the original container is missing, but since our copy also came in a plain white paper sleeve, I am quite certain that's the way it was issued. There was no original container. Three Stokowski discographers have listed the record. In the discography published in The Mystery of Leopold Stokowski, William Anders Smith writes, "This is one of three Stokowski recordings I've been unable to find on the collector's market, and so I have never heard it." In answers to my email queries, Edward Johnson and John Hunt have both confirmed that they have never seen the record either. Since Hunt is the only discographer to list unpublished live recordings, his discography is the only one that includes the opening work on the program, Phuleon's Invocation to Isis. Prior to obtaining Edward Johnson's discography in 1983, I had not known that a record of Yunus Emre had been made. At that time, I asked Helen Hosmer and Brock McElharren what they knew about the recording. Surprisingly, neither of them was aware that a record had been made of the UN performance. This slide shows a close-up of the record labels. The record was manufactured by RCA Victor with their usual 8-digit alphanumeric matrix numbers. These begin with K8, which can be found on many RCA Victor recordings manufactured during this period. The custom record of the Potsdam performance was also made by RCA Victor, also bears a K8 matrix number, and was probably pressed within weeks of the Turkish Information Office LP. So some RCA cutting engineer got to know this piece fairly well that month. Okay, next slide.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's all right. The Crane Department of Music received a 7.5 IPS two-track mono copy of the Voice of America tape of Yunus Emre shortly after the UN performance. Last year, I made a new digital transfer of that tape, which still resides in our archives and remains in good condition. I also made a digital transfer of the Turkish Information Office LP immediately upon receipt of the record, though the tape offers superior sound. WorldCat also shows tape copies of the concert at the Stanford Archive, Indiana University, and the Library of Congress. Jerry McBride, who's with us today, head librarian at the Stanford Archive, generously supplied Crane with a digital transfer of the concert from their tape, which is part of the Ted Fagan collection. Since their tape offers better sound than ours, my recorded examples have all been taken from that source. Fagan's tapes contain the complete concert, which opened with the short orchestral work Invocation to Isis by Anis Phuleyan. And before sampling Yunus Emre, I thought I should play at least a portion of that work. Other than a handful of people who may have had access to the tapes of the concert at Indiana University, the Stanford Archive, or LC, few have ever heard this recording. Phuleyan was born on the island of Cyprus, but moved to the United States when he was 15 years old. Invocation to Isis reflects Phuleyan's interest in tonal color, which made the work a natural for Stokowski. Here is the conclusion of Invocation to Isis. Thank you. Tchaikovsky was known for tampering with scores, sometimes altering tempi, orchestration, and even the music itself as his own creative instincts dictated. Yet the recorded evidence suggests that he was most willful in scores that he performed frequently and was surprisingly faithful to a composer's wishes when performing new works. Crane faculty and students who were involved in the UN performance of Eunice Emery recall that Tchaikovsky made a number of changes in orchestration, most of which were retained by Sigun for the performance he conducted in Potsdam. Those changes seem to have been made at the service of the music, to clarify lines and simplify some awkward passages. Beyond that, Tchaikovsky played it surprisingly straight in the UN concert, more so than the composer in some instances, as we'll see in at least one of the recorded examples. The opening movement of Eunice Emery is marked half note equals circa 60 in the published score, but this is probably a misprint. In the Potsdam performance, the composer began it at exactly quarter note equals 60. Tchaikovsky's UN recording is a bit slower, with the quarter note between 51 and 53. Here is Tchaikovsky in the opening of the first movement. In setting the text, "Summer's Hills Shall See Them No More," Sigun produced some of the most strikingly beautiful music in the entire oratorio. With his fine sense of line and sensitive phrasing, Tchaikovsky makes the most of this passage, which is soon repeated by the orchestra alone. The chorus had some difficulty establishing the correct pitch at the beginning of movement 5, which is an unaccompanied chorale. In this letter from Brock McElhern to Sigun, dated December 19th, McElhern describes a Potsdam recording session in which Crane Chorus recorded the opening 8 measures of the chorale, though only the first 4 were needed. McElhern notes that they tried their best to match the tempo and the balances of the UN recording, so it's obvious that Crane already had a copy of the VOA tape by the time this session took place. He also notes that Stokowski's instrumentation, clarinet, two bassoons, and two horns, was retained in all but the last take, which was sung a cappella. McElhara notes a number of difficulties with this session, including an airplane flying overhead in one take, the heating system coming on in another, and two takes with bassoon difficulties. Then, Crane's 15 IPS playback system broke down, so he was unable to hear the tape before sending it to Saigon. McElhara suggests that they try again in January if this recording is unsatisfactory. This recording was obviously deemed unusable since there's no sign of any edit in the UN recording. The proposed January session probably never took place. In the Potsdam performance of December 14th conducted by the composer, there were no difficulties with the opening passage. The score indicates a tempo of quarter note equals 88, but Saigon took it noticeably faster at about 96. An oboe has also been added to the instrumentation, doubling the soprano line. Here are the opening 12 measures from Saigon's Potsdam performance on December 14th. In the UN recording, the pitch is very unsettled in the first four measures. Stokowski is slightly slower than the score tempo, with the quarter note at about 84. Here's the beginning of movement 5 from the UN performance with Stokowski. Movement 7 is in ABA form, with the A section shortened when it returns. In both statements of the A material, there is a cadence 42 measures into this section. Although he doesn't call for it in the score, Saigon made a substantial retard at the two cadences in the Potsdam performance. This slide shows the two pages leading up to the second occurrence of this cadence. Here is Saigon in the Potsdam recording. In the UN performance, Stokowski played it straight, remaining in tempo at the cadence. Here is the conclusion of movement 7 from the Stokowski recording, and I'll point out the cadence when we arrive at that point. Sigun adapted Western counterpoint to suit his own needs. Stokowski manages to maintain clarity of line amidst the sometimes dense textures. Throughout Eunice Emery, Sigun uses a great deal of imitation, where one part imitates what another part has already done. This passage from Movement 12 begins with imitation at the octave in the strings. The entrance of the chorus resembles a fugal exposition, though Eunice Emery does not contain any real fugues. Passacaglia is a set of continuous variations over a repeated bass line called the ground bass, normally set in triple meter or 3/4 time. The Passacaglia in movement 12 is unusual in that the ground bass begins with one measure of 4/4 before switching to 3/4. Again, clarity of line was a priority for Stokowski. Sigun put a fermata over the quarter rest that ends movement 12 to prevent too rapid a transition to the final chorale, yet too long a pause would diminish the dramatic contrast that occurs. Stokowski's transition is perfectly judged. The published score indicates a very slow tempo for the final movement, quarter note equals 42, which the composer adopted for the Potsdam performance. Stokowski is noticeably faster with the quarter note at about 63. Here is Stokowski at the conclusion of movement 12 leading into the final movement.
Amen.
The concert was well received by New York Times critic Howard Taubman. Of the work, Taubman wrote, "In Eunice Emery, you do not feel that Mr. Sigoon writes with power or originality, but you are bound to respect the elevation of its purpose. Mr. Sigoon has gone beyond literal folklorism. But unlike some of the Turkish composers whose music this listener heard in Brussels last summer, he is forging a style of his own." Taubman was also favorably impressed by the performance. Mr. Sakovsky conducted with conviction and authority. There were clarity and balance in the fusion of the elements. The orchestra played with transparency, the chorus sang impressively, the soloists were effective. Sigoon must have been pleased by the performance since he subsequently dedicated the score to Sakovsky. Ambassador Essen expressed his gratitude in a letter to Helen Hosmer dated December 1, 1958. Essen wrote, "I am sure you must be extremely proud of the wonderful performance of the Crane Chorus at the concert performed at the United Nations. The audience's reaction was gratifying, and I am sure you must have felt as happy as I did at the success of our venture. May I take this opportunity to thank you again for all your efforts." Though few collectors are aware of it, the United Nations performance of Eunice Emery was reissued by the Central Bank of the Republic of Turkey in 2004 in a new digital restoration. This 2-CD set also contains a recent digital recording made in 2003 featuring Turkish performers in the original language. And that performance is excellent, I might add. For information on obtaining this recording, send an email to the contact address shown on the slide, and it's also on your handout. The recording is not for sale and is being given away to promote Turkish classical composers and Turkish artistic activities. I recommend making a polite inquiry as to how the recording may be purchased or how it may be obtained, and perhaps mentioning this presentation when you write, and I'm sure they'll send you one. Finally, I am extremely grateful to Jane Subramanian, college archivist at the Frederick Crumb Memorial Library at SUNY Potsdam, for the many hours she spent with me in the college archives scanning relevant documents and photographs. Without her thoroughly professional assistance, this paper would not have been possible. Thanks also to Mike Gray, who provided information on the Voice of America tape, and to Jerry McBride for supplying the digital transfer of the Ted Fagan tapes. Thank you very much. Questions? Yes?
I'm curious.
Apparently not. Apparently the only recording was the one made by the VOA. No, I mean, I have not found any evidence that there was a UN recording. Ted Fagan, he worked as an interpreter at the United Nations for about 30 years. And he has a lot of tapes in his collection of UN concerts if you look at the catalog online. But I can't find any evidence that there was any recording made of this concert other than the one done by the VOA. I mean, the UN may have felt that since the VOA was doing it, there was no sense in doing another one. Yes, Al.
Related question. I had a tape for many years that I don't have anymore, unfortunately, of NBC Symphony Tano Hanakainen, of a Sibelius program at the UN.
Mm.
And I was going to ask you the question, and perhaps I should ask it elsewhere. There must be a tremendous trove of materials from the UN, parallel or similar to what you have here.
Yeah, there could be. It's not something I've investigated. This concert would have taken place when?
Well, it was NBC.
It was called the NBC Symphony.
Oh. It had to be 56, 57, something.
Okay, so it was the Symphony of the Air and not the... Okay.
I let it slip between my fingers.
Okay. Yeah. Don't know. Mike.
I would have thought that Ted would have made it at the UN with his, you know, with the UN's equipment, the copy that he has. But I have for you the information of what K8OP means.
Right.
K is 1959.
Right.
Eight means custom re-recorded from client source material. Uh-huh. O means that it's a phonograph record. And P means that it's 12-inch fine groove.
Mm-hmm. Huh. But there are, I'm pretty sure I have RCA commercial recordings from that period that have an 8.
Yeah, well, in the second position?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that means that it is client's material re-recorded. That is specifically what it is.
Hmm.
At that time period,
at that time,
that meant something else.
meant something else. In 1959, that meant, you know, clients, custom re-recorded from client source material.
Interesting. Any other questions? Yes, go ahead.
I'm just going to actually ask so much a question. Did you notice at the beginning of movement five, at the end of each line, there's a chromatic over the last note, there's a chromatic over the rest?
Right.
And both recordings are played in tempo.
They're played pretty much straight through. I mean, there's a little bit of a retard at the end of the phrases, but it's not.
Particularly the second one played.
It's not. The Stokowski is even straighter than the Saigon. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, one more. David.
I'm sorry. Question, but I couldn't tell. Is the recording mono?
Yes, it's mono. Yeah, definitely. Very definitely. Yes, I'm sorry.
One more thing. It's not for the comment that this is the rarest Stokowski recording in existence. Sure, there must be so many that are one-offs. Like, I have a recording of Stokowski with the Toronto Symphony. I'm sure I've got the only copy on the planet.
Of?
Stokowski conducted the Toronto Symphony.
Oh, was it actually released?
No, it wasn't released. It's a private recording, a private disc.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, there are a number of Stokowski recordings in the discography that never got a commercial, that never got a release of any kind, custom or otherwise. But among the actual released records, which this very definitely was, it's the rarest one I've been able to come up with. Right. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary.